Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and it's a beautiful, sunny, spring-like almost Sunday here in Brooklyn. Maybe there's a spring season coming really soon ahead. I'm looking forward to that. We have a really fun one today, and I gotta say, it seems like we've been talking a lot about food and love on the show lately. I don't know why that is. Maybe we'll have to rename the podcast. We'll see where that goes. But because my guest today has written a really wonderful novel called The Arrangement, and it takes on a historical figure, but it is a fictional account of her work and her life, and it's one of the most pivotal persons in food writing. Many of you may know of her. It's M.F.K. Fisher, who is sort of like the mother of modern day narrative food writing, meaning not criticism or journalism, not really recipe writing, but a certain brand of personal essay featuring herself as a subject, but told through the lens of food. So M.F.K. Fisher is the main character in The Arrangement, written by Ashley Warlick, who's on the phone right now from South Carolina. How are you, Ashley?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, too. Thank you so much for joining us. So this is your fourth novel, actually. You've written several other, you know, you've written for, let's just go through it, The Oxford American. You've written for McSweeney's, Red Book. You're also the recipient of an NEA fellowship at the Houghton Mifflin Literary Fellowship. And you are also a buyer at the M. Judson Booksellers and Storytellers in Greenville, South Carolina, where you live.
Yeah.
So congrats on all that. We're really excited about this book. It came to me by such a surprise. And I love the focus of it on this character, M.F.K. Fisher, you know, who is someone that was so, you know, she was so formative for many food writers today, but she didn't actually write fiction, as far as I know. Is that correct?
Well, you know, it's funny you would say that. I think mm-hmm. that's a great introduction to her work. She did, in her lifetime, publish a novel called The Boss Dog, which, you know, according to all sources, is pretty autobiographical. And then very recently, her estate published a novel that she had written in the 30s called The Theoretical Foot. So she, you know, she did occasionally drift into fiction. She wrote like a demon. I mean, the woman published some, you know, 20 books in her lifetime, but was a letter writer, was a journal keeper, was one of those recorders of her thoughts and her interior that I really envy. So it doesn't surprise me that she has other talents sort of lingering out there.
Yeah, she was quite prolific. And this is in the 30s, which was sort of her heyday for writing, just to acquaint everyone there. So how did you come up with the idea of writing about her life? I know that there was a biography in 2004 that really told the whole story about M.F.K. Fisher's life, which sounds like it was fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. Joan Reardon published the first sort of comprehensive biography of Fisher's life, Poet of the Appetites. And I picked that up about 10 years ago and, you know, devoured it. I had probably read here and there, you know, essays by Fisher, and had read How to Cook a Wolf and Consider the Oyster, but had not delved into her full catalog, as it were, and her biography was a surprise to me. The portion that really lit me up was when she was first beginning to write, you know, when she was first getting manuscript pieces together for what would become Serve It Forth, which was her first collection of essays, and it really was a new kind of writing for the time, particularly from a woman. So, you know, I was drawn to that instantly.
Yeah, I mean, I love this book, and I love how it takes us through, the beginning of her career, but also it focuses on a certain love triangle, an affair that she has with, with a peer, actually, a fellow writer, and of course her husband, whom, you know, there was a little, love triangle between their other,
to find that she was discovering herself as a writer at the same time that she was making some very drastic and dramatic personal decisions was that's where the fiction writer in me kind of sat up straight. But she around the time that she began writing these essays, she began sharing them with a family friend. She and her husband, Al Fisher, lived next door to the Parrishes. Mm. And Tim Parrish became a mentor, really, to them both. Just one of those people that Fisher would describe for the rest of her life that could inspire others.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, you did an amazing job because, a lot of people might already be a fan of MFK Fisher, but you have added so much dimension to this character, someone who was very prolific about her life, right, already. But anyone who's a fan of her work knows that, you know, her writing about food was often dripping with, like, sensuality. And, she was an immodest writer. And here you create a portrait of a woman who is just that. And really bring that to life through these really, you know, racy moments and, pivotal moments that you create this drama that is so gripping.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, my primary resource in researching this book after Reardon's biography and another biography that came out while I was working on it was Fisher's writing herself, she has, in this first collection, Serve It Forth, she has this beautiful essay called Borderland. Mm-hmm. That sort of transcribes or describes the whole focus of the essay is secret eatings, that we all have secret things we do to feed ourselves. And she's waiting for her husband Al to come home from his afternoon classes, and they're living in Strasbourg at the time, and she describes with just painstaking, gorgeous detail peeling these tangerines and then drying them on a piece of newspaper on the radiator and plunging them into the snow before she eats them. This process of eating that must have taken hours. Mm-hmm. And anybody who spends that amount of time on a personal sensory experience is somebody who's going to be really interesting in other sensory experiences, I think. So I could really learn a great deal about her from reading her food writing, I think.
Yes, the secret eatings. I love that description. You read in fictions about so much about, you know, secret hungers and longings and, things that didn't quite happen and so forth. But it sounds like, and through reading this book, MFK Fisher was a kind of person who very much went for things. She just had the guts to act and do. And she was quite fearless in both writing and also love affairs and risky, exchanges in that.
I think that's true. I think it's true. I think she became that person in the period that I'm writing about. I mean, before she sort of stepped into her own light as a writer, she was very devoted to her family. The Kennedy family was very close knit. She was the eldest child. She had a sister who was about 18 months younger, and then she had two much younger siblings. And so she often acted as helpmate and caretaker and confidant. And I think she had this role that she was also pulling away from in this time where she was becoming an independent woman, making independent choices, that really, again, inspired the timing of this book, too.
One of the things that is so much fun about reading this book is that even just talking to you, when you mentioned, consider the oyster and, how to cook a wolf, I'm wanting to, go back and, read in tandem some of her work, and then another chapter of your book, and then it really is complementary, this experience. And so you created something really new, I think, with this book, which is, something that you can dig deeper into, and it's there. You know, there's other layers to it.
I mean, I'm thrilled to hear you say that. I obviously could not have written this book without a tremendous connection and passion for her work and respect mm-hmm. for her work. It was so important to me writing this to treat even these scandalous mm-hmm. choices that she was making with a measure of consideration and respect, because she is such a hero of mine on the page.
Mm. Let's talk about Tim. So this is the affair partner that she has a long affair with during the course of this book. And he's also known in her essays by a certain pen name. What was it again?
Shade Brace. And my French is terrible, but it's the name of a French town or a Swiss town near where they all live together in Switzerland. But it's Chexbres.
Okay, Shade Brace. So that's his code name in her writing.
Yeah.
Okay. But so he sounds interesting to me because early on he seems to really recognize and appreciate her talent as a writer. And this is a sort of genre, that didn't fall into any particular genre at the time, what she was doing.
Right.
Most people didn't get her type of writing. They said, you know, why don't you just do what normal women write about or something?
Right.
And, but he actually is very supportive of her and, like, helps her through the writing of her first book. How unusual was this for a man to really recognize and support? I must sound really jaded right now, but
no, I don't think you sound jaded at all. I mean, I think even in even in today's mm-hmm. time, these mentor relationships are so extraordinary mm-hmm. that I think we begin talking about two very particular people rather than two genders. But it is true that Tim not only supported and encouraged her at a time when I don't think women were encouraged to step outside of the term.
The literary boxes that,
exactly.
that be, yeah.
Exactly. But he, I think he felt none of the threats that, say, Al, her husband, did by being involved with a creative person, a creative woman, being involved with someone who was creative in the same way that you were. I mean, Tim had published a novel before he and MFK Fisher knew each other. His sister was widely published. She was sort of the Danielle Steele of her time. And I think, and perhaps that shaped him a little bit as well. He had a sibling who was very comfortable in this arena. But I also think that Tim was just one of those people who was wildly comfortable in his skin and so wanted to see that and encourage that in the people that he loved.
Well, that sounds like the ingredients for a really thrilling romance, two people who are really, really, happy in their skin.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Fisher would go for the rest of her life, and she had many varied and interesting relationships that followed this period.
Right.
And the rest of her life, she would refer to him as the love of her life.
Wow. I love that you create these moments that, you wrote in some little ditty here that you begin to see the ways that the elasticity of marriage was perhaps for MFK something similar to the elasticity of storytelling. The truth is what you make of it.
Mm. Well, I mean, that was the revolution for me, right?
Yeah.
So I had read essays of hers, and I understood that there was a person named Shea Bray in her life, mm-hmm. And I understood that she was married as a young woman, and I understood that she later had children. But when I was able to lay a timeline down mm-hmm. of signposts, a map, she had been here, she had done this while she was married to Al. She had been here, she had done this while she was living with Al and with Tim in Switzerland. It definitely created a different sensibility about who she was and what she was capable of. And I think it infused my rereading of her work with an understanding of an emotional, sort of understory that really amazed me. That I think she was able to carry love for both of these men for a long
time. Her husband, right. At the same time.
Yeah. And, you know, this book took 10 years to write, so my history of it is also very interesting. I mean, at the same time, I'm seeing, like, the Mark Sanford unfolding on television. Mm-hmm. And living here in South Carolina, you know, we heard a great deal of that for a long time. And I remember this one story of Jenny Sanford, you know, Mark Sanford coming to her after his affair had come to light and asking her advice, you mm-hmm. know, because she had been his campaign manager. And, you know, you see these moments where people are asked, as married people, to step into other supporting roles for each other, even though their emotional connection might be in tatters. And I'm always fascinated by mm-hmm. these places where we sort of stand up and do something right and true and strong for someone who we might be furious at. And I think that happens a lot in marriage.
Well, there's so many truths that are uncovered in a really raw way, in a really matter-of-fact way sometimes in MFK Fisher's work. And it sounds like you are channeling that through her story, which is, I love how meta this all is. It's really cool.
I know, it is, kind of, isn't it?
You know, so let's talk about this scene where Mary Frances Kennedy, MFK, I forgot to say your name this whole time, and Tim are having a meal in Dijon. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where she has spent, you know, countless meals with her husband, even celebrated anniversaries and so forth. And it is, you know, where she learned a lot about French food and so forth. But at the same time, she's betraying her husband, yes, by being there with Tim. But it's also sort of do you think that it's sort of also like an olive branch or like a gesture to her marriage at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, to me this moment, God, I mean, here's an example. This moment was one that she wrote about in one of her most famous essays called The Standing and the Waiting.
Okay.
So it occupies space in the same collection as the essay I spoke about earlier, Borderlands, where she's waiting for her husband. So here we have this creative elasticity where she's able to write about her devotion and this revolutionary moment in her affair in the same collection. Mm-hmm. But to me, this piece was so important to include in the arrangement, in the fictionalization of what was going on, because of the many different layers mm-hmm. that it exists on. It is Fisher trying to share her history, her past, her formative experiences with her lover. It is Fisher trying to recast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's trying to have this experience with Tim that will be just as much ballast later in her life as the original one with Al. It's just such a powerful, powerful moment, particularly when you understand where she was in her personal life, which she is not forthcoming with in the essay itself.
Yeah,
and
that's
the
true.
Essay still rocks, but you know what
that's
I mean?
True. That's funny. And I love how it's not told with like pangs of guilt or shame, but rather with just generosity and love.
God, I mean, that was the challenge, because mm-hmm. so much of her, I mean, like I said before, she was such a journal writer and a record keeper, but through various points in her life, there was clearing of the decks, and mm-hmm. She threw a great deal of this away, and we have little to go on in terms of what her interior life was like during this right. time. But for these people to have lived amongst each other and tried to support each other for as long as they did, there had to have been some measure of generosity, didn't there?
Yeah. You have figured out so much about this, you know, this life for 10 years, too. I want to get to more of that, Ashley, but we'll be right back after a quick little commercial interlude.
Okay, thanks.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
All right, you're listening to Eat Your Words. Today's guest, Ashley Warlick, the author of The Arrangement, a novel. And let's talk about what do we call this novel? Because it's historic fiction, or would you call it that, Ashley?
I guess I would, yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the easiest way, as a bookseller, mm-hmm. easiest way to talk about it.
Okay. Okay, so how does one, you know, I'm sure there's many gatekeepers here and many things you have to clear before you can just up and decide to write a fictional novel based on the life of, you know, say, somebody who's deceased and somebody who has a lot of fans and has an estate with a family. Like, how did you navigate that?
Well, you know, stupidity is sometimes your friend. So I, you know, in actuality, if a person is deceased, there's a lot fewer gatekeepers.
Okay.
And if their life is part of public record, as hers was, then, you know, that also minimizes your need to worry about that sort of stuff. I actually did not have any contact with the family while I was working on this book, and only very, very recently, as in like 10 days ago, met her daughter, Kennedy Golden.
Wow.
Which was just an amazing experience.
Cool.
Kennedy is generous, lovely person, and you know, she came to a reading that I gave in California, and we spoke beforehand, and she said, you know, very frankly, and she looks like her mother. It was kind of amazing.
Gosh. Wow.
She said, you know, we all really wanted to hate this book.
we
found that we could not, and she, you know, she was pleased with again the respect that I treated her mother's story with, and that was a tremendous, tremendous relief for me.
Wow, yeah. How scared were you about that?
You know how you can feel your heart like hammering. I could feel my heart hammering through my back.
Well, that's a really lovely outcome.
It is. As I said, just a lovely, lovely person.
Yeah, this is a new thing for you because you have written novels that are not about historical figures before. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your work and where you're trying to go next, perhaps.
Yeah, so my three previous novels are all sort of a similar bent in that they're Southern settings, they're Southern family dramas. I am very interested in our, you know, relationships that we have with the people that we are born to and the people that we are not born to. So, and I think that transferred to The Arrangement. But as for what's next, it's interesting. I got very interested in another historical marriage about a year ago, Anna and Archer Huntington.
Okay.
Anna Hyatt Huntington was a sculptress, and in the 1920s, the highest-paid female artist in the country.
Really?
Yeah, and she sculpted these huge bronze statues usually from live animals. She has a Joan of Arc that's actually in New York, but she didn't. She married late in life. She and Archer married in their 40s. So, the idea that this wasn't about having children, this wasn't about financial security, this was a marriage about something else, was fascinating to me, of course. And and I started sort of playing with their life together a little bit. They had a summer house in South Carolina in the 30s that was sort of cobbled together rice plantations, and Anna and Archer traveled with her animals that she worked from. So they had sort of created this camper that had monkeys and bears and dogs, and they hauled it from Connecticut to South Carolina every winter.
Oh
so
God.
I mean, it sounds like a great novel, doesn't it?
This is so cool. you really, you know, some, as they say, you can't make that shit up, right?
Like, exactly.
That's really interesting.
Exactly. And their house is on the coast, is now a state park, and I was touring that last summer, and I'm really amazed by the confluence of interesting things. But I think I'd like to move beyond writing sort of a straight interpretation, a historical novel about them, and really think about ways that this fits into a larger story. So that's what I'm working on now.
Cool. This is so cool, Ashley.
Yeah, thanks.
Wow. So what's more interesting, fact or fiction, in your opinion, these days?
Yeah. You know what? I'm really getting to the point in my life where imagining how the hell people did what they did is kind of the most interesting thing to me. So some sort of factual thread is what is really lighting me up right now. We'll see where that goes, because I feel like I've kind of done that at ground zero with Fisher. I mean, there was so little emotional record to go on with her that I really felt like I was making up a great deal of her interior, of all three of these people's interior lives, but I did have a very clear map of where they were and when they were there and who exactly was, you know, playing at that time. And I think I'd probably like to step away a little bit from, you know, following that closely along a history and get back to sort of imagining the landscape.
This is really cool. To be honest, your work right now is really lighting up what I do, because I get pitched so many, you know, when I tell people this is a food book podcast, you know, often I just get cookbooks or, you know, occasionally it'll be like a political sort of manifesto. So getting really interesting works that sort of cross the line and having to do with food, I think is really broadening what our understanding of food writing is and can be. So
yeah,
that's really exciting to me. So
yeah, I recently read J. Ryan Stradol's Kitchens of the Great Midwest, which I think is just a great example of really passionate connection to food launching into another stratosphere.
Hopefully getting that one on the show soon. That is
great.
Really cool. So Ashley, and last but not least, tell me a little bit about your bookstore. And why you started it. That's really cool that you're an author with a bookstore.
Myself and three partners started M. Judson in July. We opened our doors. So we are in a historic family courthouse building. So it's this gorgeous building in the dead center of our little downtown, which is quite a little foodie place itself.
Oh.
So we specialize in cookbooks and food writing, kids' books, and then Southern fiction and nonfiction. So we have new releases. They're very, very hand-selected. And our shelves are full of the stuff that really feeds us. So it's been marvelous.
We've had just
a really great response from the community. And we do a lot of food-related events. One of my partners and I are involved in an edible magazine. I know you guys have Edible Brooklyn up there. We have Edible Upcountry, and I'm the editor, and one of my partners at the bookstore is a publisher. So we do a lot of edible sort of the focused events here at the store too.
That sounds like a really great spot that you have there. And, you know, I love how curated and special it is. And it's really helping prove, you know, what brick and mortar stores have to offer that, you know, Amazon doesn't. So that's cool.
Exactly. Exactly.
But really, Ashley, you got to come up to New York more often. We'd love to have you on. Yeah. We got to see you talk more about your book. Do you have, do you have any other events going on that you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's see. I've got events going on locally through the spring, but I am headed up to New York this summer, and I'm hoping that maybe there'll be some book stuff related to that as well.
Where can we find your website?
I have a website, thank God, AshleyWarlick.com.
Cool. So we're definitely going to spread the word here at Heritage, and I love this book. I'm going to be spreading it physically amongst my friends soon.
Oh, thank you.
Too. So thank you so much for coming on air to talk about this with us today. And all best for
thanks
the next
so much.
Project.
This was a great time.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Took it so slow. for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.